T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
It is 3:07 in the Twin Cities and around Minnesota. Eric Escala in to continue our tribute to Sid. I worked with Sid for 30 years at WCCO. Did the opening for the Sports Huddle back in the 1980s and did a 6:40 a.m. spot with Sid for quite a few years on the morning show with Dave Lee. Dave Josephson at the controls. And let's get right into it. I thought we'd talk to some of Sid's coworkers, and we have on the line Bruce Hagovic. Bruce, you worked with Sid for decades. What are you going to remember about him most?
Well, there's so much to remember, Eric. And thank you, by the way, for letting me come on and do just a little part in this tribute to Sid. And I want to start by extending my condolences to his daughter, Chris, son, Chad, of course, who are all familiar with Chad on CCO, and his grandchildren. I know that family meant a lot to Sid. And many times I heard him refer to his grandkids and other family members when he was chatting around the station. Well, I think that the thing that I remember most about Sid is how inspiring he was for those around him. I mean, Sid was, without question, the hardest working person I ever met. Work really was his way of life. And people nowadays, especially young people nowadays, might be asking themselves, what should I do with this life, this one life I have on earth? And I think Sid has the answer to that. And that's hard work, diligent work, and networking. A familiar sight to me, and you know this too, Eric, in the newsroom, Sid would come galloping, and I use that word in its fullest meaning. He'd come galloping through the newsroom on his way back down the hall to a studio to do some recording. He'd have papers, newspapers under his arm. He'd have his recorder, ever-present tape recorder with him, and often not saying hello when he walked through. Even if the first time we saw him during the day, it was the first contact of the day, he wouldn't say hello. Once in a while, myself or somebody else in the newsroom would say, hey, good morning, Sid, and he would just kind of grunt. He was on a mission. He just kept moving. And I might say that I got a different side of Sid when I was working on Sunday mornings, which was for many, many years, because he, of course, would come in to do the Sports Huddle with Dave Mona. And it would be just Sid and myself in the newsroom, a much different atmosphere on the weekend, because I'd be the only one in the newsroom, and then he'd come in, and it'd be just the two of us in there. And it was during those times that I saw a totally different Sid than what I saw during the week when he was always so rushed. He was more relaxed. He wouldn't always say good morning to me or hi. He would just sit down and start reading the newspaper. And then after a few minutes, he might speak up and say, can you help me with a couple of phone calls here? Because his hearing was diminishing over the years, and he had trouble hearing on the phone. So he'd ask me to make calls for him to line up guests for the show, which, of course, I happily did. And sometimes he'd be a little disheveled coming into the newsroom on Sunday, even though he'd have a necktie on, a sport coat. His collar would be turned up or twisted around in a strange way, and he'd ask me to straighten out his collar, which I did more than once. And a small thing, I know, but it to me, it revealed a side of Sid that I think the public never really saw. There really was a softer side to him inside. He was almost grandfatherly, if you want to use that term, in dealing with me in the newsroom. He'd ask me to go get coffee for him at the athletic club next door to the station, what was then the athletic club. And, okay, I'll go get you some coffee. And I'd go over there, And I'd say to the people at the athletic club, Sid sent me to get some coffee. And they said, don't worry, no charge, just take whatever you want. And Sid was the magic word, of course.
Well, he brought in rolls from Byerly's, didn't he, usually on the weekend?
Oh, yes. Many times you bring in rolls from Byerly's. But if he didn't have time or he didn't have coffee with him, he'd send me on this little mission. And, of course, he was big on nicknames for people. And I think he did quite a bit of that Star Tribune, as I'm told. I know for me, for many years, he called me Hogga Mike, as opposed to Hogovic. And that means hog the microphone. And I'd be on Sunday morning doing news with Denny Long, and Sid would be listening on the way in, and he'd get the notion that I was talking too much. And he'd get into the studio or into the newsroom and say, Hogga Mike, it's the Denny Long show. Don't be interrupting Denny Long. Just be quiet in there. And it was just kind of his way of recognizing a person and actually his way of approving of people. I remember Sunday morning.
Go ahead.
I remember one Sunday morning. We were both, Sid and I were both in the mailroom at CCO Radio. And he was getting his mail out of his personal mail slot, and I was pulling out the newsroom stuff from the newsroom in the mail slot. And I said to him, I said, Sid, why do you give me such a rough time all the time? And you know what he said? He said, when I stop giving you a rough time, that's when you have to worry.
That's
again,
for sure.
It was his way of showing approval of a person and showing that he wanted to be a friend. Not necessarily a close personal friend by any means, but a friend. And you know what? I was thinking this morning when I picked up the Star Tribune, big headline, so long, old friend. This huge, massive picture of Sid goes down below the fold on the front page. And I was thinking they really hit it on target, I think, with that headline. Because
yeah,
I think a lot of us in Minnesota, as a community, Minnesotans as a community, in a strange sort of way, kind of consider ourselves to be a friend of Sid, even if we've never met him,
yep.
Even if we only know him from on the air at CCO and from the newspaper, and his reputation of being kind of gruff and short with people, which was true, by the way, in many cases. But we still kind of consider him a friend, almost like a relative, a distant relative passing away. We all feel a connection, I think, to Sid Hartman.
We brought us off to a good start, Bruce. CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline brought you that interview with Bruce Hogovic. Dave, you're up. Let's keep it going and get us to a break, will you?
Yeah, thanks, Eric. You're listening to Eric Eskola as we continue to honor our friend Sid Hartman today. We'll take a quick break. Up next, Larry Hagg Jr.
318 here on WCCO Radio. Eric Eskola in, continuing our tribute to Sid Hartman. AC, are you there, Adam?
I am. What an honor. Well, this is like unbelievable. Eric Eskola returning to the WCCO airwaves.
Yeah, I'm fooling him again here until 5 o'clock. I have something that I think no other CCO employee has on Sid.
Okay.
I went on a double date with him.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, jeez.
Kathy and I went with Sid and Carla from upstairs. She was one of the front office people.
All right.
We went to the Decathlon Club for dinner out on the strip there in Bloomington. Then we went to Neil Diamond.
Oh, my God.
At the Met Center. This is how old this was. And I joked with Sid the next morning that he had gotten up during the show, flicked his lighter on and held it over his head and kept yelling, Kentucky woman! He didn't like that a bit.
Well,
but don't you think that's a...
Oh, my. I mean, first of all, the double date, but then the Neil Diamond concert. I mean,
pretty good, huh?
You can't make that up. Now,
You stick around. I got other guests, okay? But you come in as my reliever, my closer.
Anytime.
All right, man. Larry Hagg Jr. joins us. His dad hired Sid back. What, Larry, was it the 50s?
55.
Yeah. And those were such important years in the sports scene when Minnesota was struggling to get pro sports and everything. And how'd that all come about? Your dad ever tell you?
Well, Dan and I never talked about it, but I observed it and looked back on it for many years. And it was radio that really made Sid a personality. If If it hadn't been for WCCO, Sid would have been a sports columnist and a darn good one. But he wouldn't have become the person that you and I have been talking about for the last 24 hours here, who managed to enter our lives and enter our homes in ways that a sports columnist in a newspaper can't do.
And he had a, you know, he didn't have the great voice. He kind of had the brusque manner, but it seemed to work on radio, didn't it?
Well, and my father had understood that, I think, in the almost 100 years of WCCO radio, my father was the only general manager who had on-air experience. He was in front of the mic for 10 years, up at 3:30 in the morning as farm service director, and then in the legislature for the same 10 years. So he had this innate understanding of the audience, and he knew what it was like to have mic fright. He came to CCO without any previous radio experience. So he put his trust in Sid because Sid had knowledge and connections. And in the end, that was much more important than the sound of his voice on the air.
What do you think the station meant to Sid?
Well, certainly it was great for the paper and great for Sid because it gave his column exponential visibility. And the folks at the Star Trib, Bauer Hawthorne, and all the other great leaders understood the value of that. And Sid really, if you look at it, came into his own, I think, in the mid-50s when he simultaneously had the radio exposure along with the sports column. He had been writing that column for 10 years before Dad spotted him and asked him to come on board. And that was just at the time that the Twin Cities and Minnesota were aspiring to be major league. We had this great fear that tucked up here against the Canadian border with 6 months of winter, we were going to be a frozen backwater if we didn't have major league sports. So Sid comes to CCO in 55, maintains his column with the paper. Calvin Griffith starts negotiations with Minnesota business leaders as early as 1957. May of 57, the Dodgers and the Giants leave for the coast. June 1958, I remember distinctly being at Met Stadium for an exhibition game between the Boston Red Sox and the Minneapolis Millers as a way to showcase Met Stadium for Major League Baseball. And Sid was, to my mind, he was really a businessman disguised as a sports writer, and he saw sports as a tool for economic development in this part of the country. And whether you like big league sports or not, you may have to ask yourself, if you are a fan of the Guthrie Theater, would Tyrone Guthrie have chosen the Twin Cities if we hadn't had this momentum on the other side of the spectrum in the sports world? All of these things gelled together in the late 1950s. Sid, I'm sure, never set foot in the Guthrie. Highly unlikely that he ever did. But all of these things were happening in the late 50s, and Sid Hartman, bless him, was a very important part of that chemistry because he commanded such a wide audience, both on the print side and on the radio side.
And we should say, Larry, you were a producer at CCO and other jobs higher up, so you know of what you speak. Do you know if Sid had quite a bit to do with the CCO getting the baseball contract to broadcast the games?
The radio package was a big part of the deal. I know that. I think that may have been the tipping point for Calvin Griffith. CCO radio gave Calvin everything he needed, and In those days, WCCO radio was like a public address system. It's certainly still a great radio station. I'm proud to be still associated with it and call myself a CCO alum. But two of every three radios in the upper Midwest were turned to WCCO. And at nighttime, it still is clear channel nationwide. So It had tremendous influence, and I think it was one of the major draws for Calvin Griffith. And I think Sid was a very important part of that equation.
Well, were you surprised how Sid became just such a household name and kind of this larger-than-life figure?
I was. The column was a must-read, but he was not a dynamic radio personality. But he brought credibility to everything he said and did because he simply worked harder than anybody else in the business. And if there's a lesson for young people today on how to succeed in any aspect of life, Sid was it. It wasn't necessarily talent or lineage or formal education, certainly not wealth. It was hard work. And that's a great lesson for young people today.
Sure is. Larry Hagg Jr., thank you so much for joining us. All the best to you, sir. Good to talk to you.
You're welcome. Eric, thank you.
You bet. CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline bringing you that interview. And Dave, let's move on with another break.
Yeah, you're listening to Eric Eskela on News Talk 830 WCCO, filling in for Paul and Jordana as we pay tribute to our friend Sid Hartman. Paul will join join you again tomorrow morning. He's filling in for Dave Lee. Jordana back tomorrow. But coming up next, we'll catch up with Dennis Bracken.
Are you going to be over at the XL Energy Center for the Wild Developmental Camp?
Pardon me?
Sir Sidney, I am really looking forward to this next guest. Dennis Bracken, longtime colleague of Sid's at the Star Tribune and on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline, Dennis Bracken joins us. Dennis, were you Sid's boss at one time?
You know, I was an assistant editor under Glenn Crevier. I think we had two assistant editors. We called them team leaders. You know, technically, I guess you could have considered that, but like Glenn has always said, Sid would never accept that. So, no, we were more peers.
All right. Now,
I did have the distinction, Eric, of working longer with Sid than anybody in the sports department.
Okay, well, then you're uniquely qualified for this interview. You became kind of the prankster in chief to get Sid going, and just take it from there. Tell me how that got started and what were some of your highlights.
Well, it started simple enough. You know, I realized, like any good prankster, you have to pick your targets. And I realized early Sid had a combination of traits that made him perfect for pranks. He had a huge ego, and he was extremely gullible. And it started small. I would do things like, take the clear, like the plastic wrapping tape, the clear stuff, and I would tape his phone around and around the old desk phones. And then I'd go out to my desk and call him, and I'd always tell a couple other people, and he'd be picking up his phone, slamming it, trying to answer it. You know, just simple things. And then he'd come out, and he'd swear, and I developed a name. I became Mr. Blank, and you can fill in the letters. I think it had seven letters. And, you know, a lot of little things like that, but it did slowly progress to more. And one of my favorite ones, you could take advantage of Sid's huge University of Minnesota love. And I think it was in the early to mid 80s, Gophers got a bowl bid to a bowl in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Independence Bowl.
Huh?
Independence Bowl.
Oh, okay, yeah, yep. And the rest of us kind of laughed and said, oh, my gosh, if they get a couple hundred people going to Shreveport, they'll be lucky. And Sid felt they'd get thousands of people going. And so one night when I was working and Sid was working, and, of course, I filled in all the people working on the desk, and Sid had glass windows we could watch him in his office. And what I did is he was absolutely convinced that throngs of Gopher fans would go to Shreveport. And I called friends and relatives and gave them times. 5 minutes apart, like 7 o'clock, 7:05, 7:10, 7:15. And I gave them each a question, and I probably had at least 10 people lined up, and they would ask, are there tickets to the game available? Is it sold out yet? And how do you get to Shreveport? Is there a charter flight I can get on? And just all kinds of different questions, fan questions. So every 5 minutes, Sid got a call, and we would watch him pick it up, and he'd politely answer the question and say thank you. And we had a pool. How many people would it take before Sid came out and extolled and gloated that there were indeed thousands of people that were going to go to the game? And I think we got to six, and we saw him pick up the sixth one, and he came out with his arms in the air, and he said, I told you there's incredible interest in this game. I'm getting calls after call after call. And of course, I laughed, and I got the familiar Mr. Blank Blank. Now, but it was fun. A lot of fun stuff like that. That one took a lot more planning than most of mine.
Yeah, that was elaborate.
And,
That was elaborate.
Yeah, that was elaborate. Yeah, yeah. A lot of them were spur of the moment. Like, you remember Charlie Hallman, from the late Charlie Hallman, but Charlie was a good friend from, worked at the St. Paul paper, and we covered Gopher basketball at the same time, and Sid was, because it was Gophers, was always over, waiting to talk to Clem, and he just liked hanging around the U. So anyway, we're coming out of one of Clem's press deals one day, and Charlie stumbles over, steps on a tube of pink lipstick, and he picks it up and goes, we've got to be able to do something with that. And I said, immediately in front of us, Sid had just bought a brand new Cadillac. And I said, give me that, Charlie. And I walked over, and we didn't do it on the driver's window, but on the front window on the passenger side, we wrote sale 1999 in pink lipstick. Sid, not happy on that one.
No.
But the thing about it is.
Go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I think Sid liked the attention because people were laughing, and, you know, and he didn't mind a good joke.
Now, when I was trying to track you down, a couple of your colleagues said, ask him about the turkey drawing contest.
That was an early one. That was kind of in with the taping the phones and then calling them. I might have only worked there couple of years, and I think my oldest son was 4, and he entered the turkey contest. And I saw, there were thousands of these. If you remember the paper at that time, they had a back page, I think, and
sure,
kids would color the turkey and send it in. Well, I found the custodians and asked them how many dumpsters of turkeys, the turkey drawings they had, and they told me there were 3 or 4 huge dumpsters. They showed me where they were. And I said, could I borrow these for an afternoon? And so I took the elevator up with about 4 dumpsters. And what I did before Sid arrived in his office, I crumpled up all these papers and filled up his office so he couldn't even get in. He would open the door and it would be just chock full of turkeys.
Aside from the pranks, what was it like to have Sid as a colleague?
Good and bad. The nature of my job, Eric, is that I became kind of the investigative sports reporter and for all things university. Whenever the university had a alleged violation or graduation problems or legal problems, yeah, I investigated, and Sid, because of his love for the U, during those times, it was a little rocky. Most times I enjoyed working with Sid, but when you're investigating the U, and he loves the university so much, he would try to, you know, I guess if it was politics, you would say he obstructed justice, or at least the search for justice. He would tell people not to talk to me. He would tell them I was no good and couldn't be trusted. And fortunately, I had enough people at the U that knew me and did trust me. I was able to do my job. But, you know, at those times, Sid's first love was the university, not necessarily the newspaper. Certainly not the search for truth about the U.
What about, you know, he's a kid of the Depression, and, you know, it was the 40s and 50s. Sports writing was a much different enterprise than it was in the modern day. Maybe some of that carried over into that was the clash with kind of the modern approach to sports writing. Is that fair?
I think so. You know, there were things that Sid did, especially early on, that, I mean, you wouldn't even think of it now. You know, Sid was, in essence, the general manager of the Lakers. When Max Winter owned the Lakers, he asked Sid to run the team because he didn't know a whole lot about basketball. So Sid made trades and helped with the draft, and that wouldn't go on today, or it wouldn't have gone on in the last 40 years, but in the 40s and 50s, it did.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Oh, no, go ahead. He was from a different era.
I'm wondering if that notes column that he had in his prime, where it was a lot of dot and dash stuff and bits and pieces here and there, is that going on anywhere else in the country, or is that kind of with the internet and with social media and so forth, maybe that's not as much of a newspaper staple anymore?
Not as much. I think there were people that names escape me, but I think a columnist from Atlanta did that sort of thing, and there was one in Florida that went on for a long time. But no, those are kind of not a staple anymore. Although,
What's the strip?
You know, I love the jottings and the dot dot dot. You know, you could pick up things there.
What's the strip going to be like without him?
No, it'll be different for sure. I've been retired for 4 years, and I think the last few years, you know, Sid broke his hip about 3-4 years ago, and I don't think he came into the office as much, and it was always fun having Sid around, unless I was investigating the U. But, you know, we used to look forward to his arrival. Maybe we had a joke planned or, you know, just teasing him about his love of the Gophers, you know. As big an ego as he had, very approachable, and the things people have said about him were true. My parents later in life were both very ill, and Sid would, you know, very often, many days, ask me about him and offer to get him to the Mayo Clinic and get him an appointment, and, you know, just very nice.
That's a great place to end it. Dennis, so nice to hear from you. Enjoy continued success in the retirement, and really enjoyed having you on our show. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks, Eric.
You bet. Dennis Bracken, retired from the Star Tribune, was one of Sid's colleagues, the longest serving colleague with Sid of anybody over at the Star Tribune. Dave, up to you to get us, keep us moving here.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. You listen to Eric Eskola on News Talk 830 WCCO as we continue to pay tribute to Sid Hartman. Of course, he passed yesterday at the age of 100. We go from a colleague of Sid's in the newspaper to a colleague of Sid that used to sit in the chair I'm sitting in right now. Steve Ink, former WCCO producer, will be with us next.
I know, Mr. Optimism, but we expected a lot more, Mr. Optimism.
Sid Hartman, we miss him already. 21,000 bylines, 119 columns this year, including one on the day he passed away at age 100. And speaking of the nicknames that he gave people, our next guest was either Mr. Cheap and Greedy or Mr. Stubborn, the great Steve Ink, for decades a producer at WCCO. Inkster, how are you?
Well, I couldn't be more stubborn, Eric. Thanks for having me.
That's for sure. You bet. Where do you want to start with Sid? You traveled with him. You did produce many, many, many of his shows. What stands out to you?
Well, I can just echo what Dennis Bracken said about how Sid would try to help you, you know, when you were in need. He mentioned his parents and Mayo Clinic, but there were, you know, there were so many times when there were smaller things where Sid could, you know, could step in and help you out, and he would. So he was a good coworker. He's a little bit hard on his coworkers, but but he was fun, always interesting to work with.
Yeah, I know you've told me quite often about how the crowds reacted to Sid, and I was really struck by the 1991. Was it the U.S. Open at Hazeltine? Sid got inside the ropes, didn't he, with the final group?
Right. On Sunday, on the final day of the tournament, we had a we did the Sid and Dave sports huddle from Hazeltine, and when we went to follow the last group of golfers, Sid had somehow gotten in underneath in the security ropes, and he walked the inside of the course while all the fans and other reporters obviously stayed out. So Sid had a way of getting in and getting the best the best spots.
Do you remember driving him down to Mankato for a Viking preseason training camp? And I won't say which one of the Vikings. Will you cut off one of the Vikings in the parking lot? Can you tell us that story?
Well, a lot of times I tell the story about Sid's impact on the pro athletes, with the different, with all the different teams here in town. But I used to drive Sid down to Mankato, and once we were getting ready to go home, I started to pull his car, because Sid never drove. You drove him, and he'd usually fall asleep somewhere around St. Peter. Anyway, we were pulling out, and a player came whipping around the corner of the parking lot and ran into the back of Sid's new Cadillac. I got out of the car, and the player started to give me a hard time. But then Sid got out of the car, and when this former Viking saw Sid, his attitude changed immediately. he was no longer just yelling at the schlub driving Sid. Now he was worrying about his career. You know, Sid had that impact on players, and he certainly was in with owners and the ownership and the coaches over the years.
Sure. Do you remember the time we went to Sid's when he had finished his autobiography, and he had the book signing out at Byerly's in St. Louis Park?
we were at the Byerly's. If you remember right, people would line up, buy the book and get an autograph. And Sid was always very friendly with people who were, the people who came out to see him. But that day, I remember that you had autographed a book or two along with Sid, and this was not your event, doubly.
Remember, he banished us to the meat counter, remember?
Yeah.
Well, here's what I did.
Sid did not want us participating in his book signing.
Well, he got mad because I think he mentioned me on like page 184. So when I think people recognized my voice or had seen me on public TV or whatever.
Of course.
And so I turned to my page 184 and I wrote in there, "I can't believe you got this far in this book." And he hated that. But then he bought us lunch, remember? Right. You know, he was mad at us, but then he bought us lunch. So.
Well, he, his advice was always that people, you should pick up the tab because people will remember it.
Yeah.
But as Sid got older, his advice was pick up the tab so that he didn't have to.
You also told me a funny story about, was it Kirk Loudermilk's contract negotiations on the sports huddle?
Well, that was a, you know, we worked on the sports huddle with Dave Mona and Sid, you know, for many years, and Sid liked to help with the negotiating contracts. And this Kirk Loudermilk, who was a terrific offensive lineman center from Ohio State, Sid called him Mr. Buckeye, I think. But Loudermilk was holding out, and Mike Lynn was trying to get him signed and into camp. And Lynn came on with Sid, and Sid, for whatever reason, was upset about the negotiations, and he started to rail on Loudermilk and his agent. And Sid was so harsh that Mike Lynn was even begging Sid to stop. Sid had a way of, Loudermilk, you're a genius. You think you invented football. Sid was tearing into him so bad that Lynn said, "Sid, what are you doing?"
Did you have to get those legislators on the air during the stadium stuff?
Very often I did. Very often, Sid always took the role of trying to obviously he wanted the stadiums built.
More than life itself, so he
kind of took the role of the villain in the ongoing drama of stadium talk. And so many times when I would talk to people from the state capitol, especially if I was hoping to have them on the air, one of the first things they'd say is, "Inkster, you tell Sid." they would want me to back Sid off, which of course that could never happen.
They asked you to fall on the hand grenade, huh?
Yeah, I was the one who was magically going to get Sid to take it easier or change his mind, and that just never happened.
Lots of luck. Steve Ank, great to talk to you. Great memories of Sid, and you were one of his trusted minions for many, many, many years, and all the best to you. Thanks for sharing.
Well, thanks for the time, Eric, and we'll all remember the many good things that Sid did for our community.
You bet. Steve Ank with us on CCO. Adam Carter?
Yes, sir.
I was trying to remember some of Sid's great witticisms. And one of the ones, when I was doing the 640 with him back in the day,
yep.
he was trying to say that some problem had arisen.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "It's reared its ugly rear end."
Yeah.
Instead of,
yes,
it reared its ugly head.
Yeah.
Then the other thing that I use to this day, I think I used it this morning talking to someone. You would ask him any situation about pro sports in particular, but all sports really. And I'd say, "What's causing this?" And he would say, "Money, sir."
Yeah.
And that is a statement that I have used,
yep,
many, many times a day since he told me that back probably in the 90s.
It's widely applicable to many different situations. But you and Angster were talking about it too. Just the boring original nicknames, but they're legendary now. I mean,
oh yeah,
he'd see you with a bowl of soup and suddenly, "Mr. Soup," and then you'd be Mr. Soup for the rest of your life.
That's great. You're going to do some news. We're going to come back in the 4 o'clock hour with Greg Wong, who has 100 stories as a competitor with Sid. From the Pioneer Press, Larry Fitzgerald, Rochelle Olson from the Star Tribune. We have a real nice lineup in the second hour as we continue our tributes to Sid right here on 830 WCCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.